Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Zayin Amud Aleph, two lines down. Rabbi Ami Shora Lemival B'Tchila B'Shabbat. So we had begun this process of determining what the halacha was. We spoke about Rav and Shmuel's positions. And then the Gemara got sidetracked in discussing exactly how Rav and Shmuel's positions would work out. And then we spoke about other issues that were involved with this. Now the Gemara is coming back to this same genre of Psak Halacha, talking about different Amoraim and the Psak Halacha with regards to having Biyah Rishonah on Friday night. So Rabbi Ami Shor Lemivel B'Tchila B'Shabbat. Rabbi Ami said it's no problem to have Biyah Rishonah on Friday night. Amar Le Rabbanon V'Halok Tiva Ktubata. What about the fact that she doesn't have a Ktuba? Amar Le'u Atafsua Mitaltalin. They grab a hold of the Mitaltalim. So instead of having a Ktuba, we'll use something that stands instead of the ketubah. So this is interesting from a number of standpoints. First of all, many of the Rishonim believe that a marriage cannot be consummated. One cannot have biyah without a ketubah. And therefore, the necessity for ketubah here is paramount. That's number one. Number two is, why doesn't she have a ketubah over here? It seems to be that they ran out of time. It was either close to Shabbat, on Shabbat itself. For whatever reason, they are unable to put together the ketubah, because of course you can't write on Shabbat, but they can't affect the kinyanim that are necessary. Now with regards to getting married on Shabbat itself, we know from the Mishnah and Beitzah that one of the things one is not allowed to do on Shabbat is kiddushin, because it's a problem of kinyan, it's a problem of ketivat shtar, so on and so forth. The question really arises with regards to nisuin on Shabbat. Is one allowed to have nisuin on Shabbat? With regards to Yom Tov or Moed, we know from the Gemara in Moed Katan that there it says, one, Ein Marvim Simcha B'Simcha, you're not allowed to mix up the two smachot, the Simcha of the Chatuna with the Simcha of Yom Tov. In addition, it says, V'Samachta B'Chagecha V'Lo B'Ishtecha, that you have the Simcha of the Chag and not with your wife. Over there we discuss whether those are really one reason or two reasons. Question is, does that apply to Shabbat? If it's a Gzerat HaKatuv, V'Samachta B'Chagecha V'Lo B'Ishtecha, then it clearly does not apply to Shabbat. If it's Ein Marvim Simcha B'Simcha, then it's questionable as to whether it applies to Shabbat, because with regards to Shabbat, there's a din in Oneg, but there's no din in Simcha. The Ramban says that in the sheet of the Rambam himself, that he thinks the Rambam believes that it's because of Ein Marvim Simcha B'Simcha. The Rambam himself really talks about other issues around it. The Rambam says that the reason you can't do it on Shabbat is because maybe you'll do the Tzarchei Tzudah on Shabbat. And you do these other things that will lead to Chilul Shabbat. For the Rambam, it seems to be that it's a Gzeira Otu because of the things that surround the Chuppah. But the Ramban explains the Rambam is saying that it is Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha. On the other hand, the Ramban himself says he thinks it's a Sur on Shabbat because Chuppah is a type of Kinyan. Nisuin or Chuppah is a type of Kinyan, and the Kinyan is not allowed on Shabbat. Just like by Kiddushin it's not allowed, so too by Chuppah it's not allowed. The Meiri, on the other hand, says that Nisuin or Chuppah on Shabbat is Mutar. You can do it on Shabbat. And this might be colored by their view of what the relationship is between Kiddushin and Chuppah and Nisuin. The Ramban is of the belief that Kiddushin is a mitzvah and a kinyan, and so is Chuppah a mitzvah and a kinyan. They're both part and parcel of the process, two separate mitzvot that make up each one of them like 50% of the process. On the other hand, for the Rambam, it seems that Kiddushin is the Iker kinyan, and that Chuppah is just a consummation of the Kiddushin. Even though his son, Rav Avraham ben Rambam, learns differently in the Rambam, but we'll see that later. The Meiri, on the other hand, sees Chuppah as being the result of Kiddushin, or maybe the matir for Kiddushin. There's no kinyan involved. It's simply the beginning of the marriage process, which then makes the woman muteret instead of being asura because of the erusin. The only question is, how does this help? Because what they ended up doing, the end is tafsua mitaltalin. They grabbed mitaltalin instead. Now, the mitaltalin also require a kinyan. If you can't do a kinyan on Shabbat for the ketubah, you also can't do a kinyan for the mitaltalin. And you see Rashi says over here, tenula mitaltalin tachat yada, give her a mitaltalin on her hand, b'mashkom, to be collateral, the shibud ketubata, ad sheyichdavu shtar ketubata b'shibud karkaot. Because the way the ketubah finally turns out after a number of iterations is that the way we have our ketubah today, it brings a general lien on the husband's property. So here she's lacking that general lien. So we're going to give her a specific property that stands instead as the mashkon. But again, you have to ask the question about why are we allowed to perform the kinyan here to get these mitaltalin? And second of all, what do these metaltalin do? So there are different approaches amongst the Rishonim. Some suggest that the metaltalin are necessary at all, because the ktubah and the tna'ei ktubah are all in place, whether you have a ktubah or not. The Chachamim instituted, even in places where they didn't write a ktubah, it was automatic that the women received these rights, and all the conditions of ktubah were in effect. So here, truthfully, you don't need this. So why are we to face the metaltalin? To face the metaltalin for the woman's sake. So she should have the sense of security that this isn't just some tryst that's going on, but rather this is a marriage. And how do we know that? Because there's a ktubah. Well, there's no ktubah here. So we take the metaltalin in order to reinforce the fact that she has these rights, and there is a ktubah associated over here. So that's one way to approach it, which is this is for more of a show than it is in reality. The other approach in the Rishonim is that the Tfisat Metaltalim happened before Shabbat, and it's just easier to do the Tfisat Metaltalim than write a whole Ketubah before Shabbat. The third approach is that the problem of Kinyan is really a problem midrabanan. And since you are dealing with a problem midrabanan, then the Rabbanan over here instituted the ability to, because of the mitzvah, to do the Tfisat in order to create the Kinyan that allows for it to go through. Rav Zvid shor the mival b'tchila b'Shabbat. Again, here another amora. Rav Zvid paskin that you could have bi'ah rishona on Shabbat. Ikad amrei Rav Zvid gufei b'al b'tchila b'Shabbat. Not only did he paskin that way, but he himself acted this way that he actually had bi'ah rishona b'Shabbat. Rav Yehuda shor the mival b'tchila b'Yom Tov. Rav Yehuda permitted a bi'ah tchila on Yom Tov. Amar Rav Papi mishmei derava lo teima b'Yom Tov d'shari ha'b'Shabbat asur. Right, your initial reaction to a statement like that is Yom Tov yes, Shabbat no. It says don't say that. Duhu adin dafilu Shabbat na mishari. Shabbat is also mutar. So why mention Yom Tov? Ma'ase shehaya kachaya, because that was just the incident, the case that was brought before Rabbi Yehuda, or the situation was on Yom Tov, so he gave a psak about Yom Tov. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't think the same thing is true by Shabbat. Rav Papa mishmei derava amar b'Yom Tov shari b'Shabbat asur. Rav Papa, on the other hand, says no. When he said Yom Tov, he meant Yom Tov. And Shabbat is a sur. Amale Rav Papa, the Rav Papa. Rav Papa challenges Rav Papa, ma datech. What is your thought process over here? Mitoch shehutra chabura letzorech. Hutra nami shelo letzorech. This is the concept of mitoch. We saw it back in the Gemara in Beitza, which is that melachot, once they are mutar for things that are tzorech Yom Tov, they are also mutar for things that are not necessarily tzorech Yom Tov. We'll see exactly how to define that in a second. But here, Shchita, which is a form of Chabura, is Mutar on Yom Tov. So too over here, the Chabura involved Bia should also be Mutar on Yom Tov. So now, when you look at the question of Mitoch, Tosafot and Rashi and the Gemara in Beitza, and Daf Yudal Tavir Bet, they argue about, when we invoke this principle Mitoch, since it's Mutar to do this Melacha on Yom Tov, it is mutar to do this melacha, even though it's not for Yom Tov necessarily. Tosfot over there says you need a tzorech kitzat, and he says it over here. Uvad she'e tzorech hanat hayom, o tzorech kiyum mitzvah b'yom tov. You need some sort of connection to Yom Tov. It cannot be totally independent of any necessity. And therefore he says you can't just carry things around willy-nilly. It doesn't mean just because hotzah is mutar on Yom Tov that you can carry on Yom Tov. You want to carry in Yom Tov for Tzorcha Yom? Fine. You want to carry in Yom Tov because there's a Kiyum Mitzvah? That's fine. You want to just carry? Then it doesn't work. Rashi, on the other hand, in the Gemara in Beitza, suggests that once you say Mitoch, it's as if the Melochah is Hutra. That Melochah doesn't exist almost on Yom Tov. Then you have to ask, within Rashi's Shita, you have to deal with, once you've said things like that, then what are the Isurim?
Or when does Rashi ever have to invoke Shava the Chol Nefesh?
More problems that you can run into, and why do we have certain things on Yom Tov? We discussed that extensively when we dealt with the Gemara in Beitza. But if you look at Melechet Yom Tov and Mitoch, there are different ways to look at this by terms of Tzorcha Chol Nefesh. Is it, and you have the most expansive and the most minimal view, which is when do you need a Tzorech? So the possibility is that you need a Tzorech anytime. Anytime you want to do a Melech on Yom Tov, it's got to have a tzorech that is associated with the yom. And as Tosafot claims, that is either a tzorech hanat hayom or tzorech kiyum mitzvah b'yom tov. One of those two things. That applies to everything in Ochel Nefesh. On the other extreme, You could say that anything that is ochel nefesh doesn't require a tzorech. Anything that is not ochel nefesh is bound by this mitoch, and therefore it has a requirement of a tzorech. A middle view, which is the view of the Ramban and many of the other Rishonim, is that when it deals with achilah, when it comes to eating and food, there you don't need a tzorech. That's automatically covered by tzorech ochel nefesh. When do you need a tzorech yom tov, or tzorech anat yom, or tzorech mitzvah? That is when it's not ochel, it's not food. We're going to see the Gemara go through different stages here, in which it basically goes through each of these items that I said. That's what the Gemara is going to focus on. So at first, the Gemara says, what are you thinking? You thinking that mitoch, that shechita is allowed, therefore here also the tzorech is hutra nami, shalo the tzorech. So also here by biyar be allowed, el miata. If that's the case, mutar lasot mugmar be yom tov. On yom tov it should be mutar to do mugmar, mitoch shehutra havara the tzorech. Since one can burn items, cook for the tzorech of yom tov, hutra nami shalo the tzorech. So too you can burn the incense on yom tov. Now, the incense is used to put aromatic or perfume into the clothing or into whatever you want to make it smell nice. So here, you can do this even on Yom Tov. So here, the suggestion is that the Tzorech HaYom Tov is not required in any way. There's no Tzorech HaYom Tov, there's no Tzorech HaNat HaYom, or Tzorech Mitzvah. As long as it is under the Mitoch, then you're fine. This is the first approach of the Gemara, that there's a very wide net cast over here by Tzorech Ochel Nefesh, and so Mitoch Shehutra Ochel Nefesh, it's Hutra Legamrei for everything else, and you can include anything, including Mugmar. Based on you, Rav Papa, we would come to the conclusion that Mitoch would allow anything, that there is no restriction. Rav Papa comes back to him and says, no, Amalei Alecha Gmar Kra, Ach Asher Yeachel L'chol Nefesh, Davara Shaveh L'chol Nefesh, that it's not just a blanket head there. It has to be something that is shaveh l'chol nefesh. It has to be something that everybody would enjoy. So, Amar lei Rav Acha brei d'Rav ol Rav Ashi, ela mi'ato. So now we go to the other extreme. Nizdamlin lo tzvi b'yom tov, ho venu shaveh l'chol nefesh. Wait, if he gets, all of a sudden he gets a deer on yom tov, that is not something that is shaveh l'chol nefesh. Not everybody likes venison. Not everybody likes deer. Hachanami dasur l'mishchatei. So there is, you shouldn't be asur l'mishchatei, you shouldn't be allowed to be shochetet. So again, we went from one extreme, which was the presentation of a Papa Shita being that you don't need any tzorech, and shaveh l'chol nefesh has no application whatsoever by anything, just hutra. Now we go to the other extreme, which means that even by achila, even by ochel nefesh, we're going to require shaveh l'chol nefesh. We're going to have strict requirements about everything inside of Yom Tov. So we've gone down to the other extreme. The Gemara comes back and says, no, that we're going to take basically the middle approach, which is, Hamalei Ana, Devara tzorech l'chol nefesh kamina. I said something that is needed for all nefesh. Tzvi, tzorech l'chol nefesh. Tzvi is something that everybody needs, whereas mukmar is not something everybody needs. In the end, this is the question that Rishonim deal with. What was his conclusion? His conclusion is clearly that everybody needs to eat. So, it's food. If it's food, everybody agrees that it's good. Now, it doesn't mean if you like to eat this or you like to eat that, that means that it's tzorech l'chol nefesh or not tzorech l'chol nefesh. Everybody needs to eat. So this is a basic necessity of every person, and therefore it's permitted. Mugmar is only for mefunakim. Those are for people who are very particular and like their things to smell a certain way. They use mugmar. Not everybody needs mugmar. Some people might like it, some people might want it, but not everybody needs it. So because of that, you've come now down to a conclusion that there is this balance here. Certain things, we're going to have a requirement that you test whether they are tzorech hayom tov or they are tzorech mitzvah, shoveh l'chol nefesh. Other things we're going to say are automatically captured by tzorech l'chol nefesh. How wide is that net that captured tzorech l'chol nefesh? It's clear here that achila is captured. And for many of the Rishonim, that's it. That's what the Ramban says. You deal with food, you don't have to ask any question. You deal with food, it's mutar on yom tov. Whatever you need to do, whatever you want to do, you do it on yom tov. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim that say that it applies even more broadly to all tzorech l'chol nefesh. Anything that is considered ochel nefesh, then you don't have to test whether it's food or not food. It doesn't have to be necessarily food. It can be anything that's hanat gufo, anything that comes under that broad context of ochel nefesh and not mitoch. As long as you're not invoking mitoch, you don't have to ask any questions. As soon as you enter into mitoch, then you have to add on this other dimension. Is it shaveh l'chol nefesh? Is it tzorech yom tov? Is it a tzorech mitzvah? You have to start asking these additional questions. Obviously, bia will come under this question, which is, How do you view bi'ah? If you bi'ah is tzahanat atzmo, that is a certain amount of pleasure, enjoyment that he's having on Yom Tov, that would be true of anybody. So then over there, maybe you don't have to ask the question of Tzorach Yom Tov or Tzorach Mitzvah, because it's part of the, under this rubric of Ochel Nefesh. Or, do we say on the other side, which is, it's not Achila. So since it's not Achila, now you have to start asking the question. If it's not Achila, then, is it Mitoch? If it's Mitoch, what's the Tzorach Yom Tov? Probably not a huge Tzorach Yom Tov. Tzorach Mitzvah? Yes. Okay, there is a Tzorach Mitzvah. Tzorach Mitzvah the Yom Tov? Maybe not. That's a question of how much of a Tzorach you need. The Tosafot back in Beitza Klei Zeh just Tzorach Tzat. You just need a small amount of Tzorach. We don't have a high threshold for what is the Tzorach, as long as it's just not willy-nilly, or it's not for Tzorach Machar, or Tzorach Edmo. Meaning that it's not something that has nothing to do with Yom Tov at all. Here, it's something that you can do. Now, the question of Eif Shar La'asota, that is a question by some of the Rishonim. Lechem is Matir, Hana'ah, and things that are Shaved Ochol Nefesh. That is also the Matir by Rabbi Yehuda for Machshirei Ochol Nefesh. By Machshirei Ochol Nefesh, Rabbi Yehuda has a clear classification that things that can be done for Erev Yom Tov, you may not do on Yom Tov. Things that cannot be done on Erev Yom Tov, you can do on Yom Tov. That's by Machshirei Ochol Nefesh. The question is, does that carry forward into Mitoch? So that will be depending on how you view the Lechem. There are Rishonim that suggest, the Shita brings, I think it's in the name of the Raivud, he brings down that there is this concept, since we learn it out of the same limud of Lachem, for Mitoch, because that's the Chol Tzarchichem, Lachem means all your needs, so that's how you invoke Mitoch over here. So too, just like by Lachem of the Machshirei Ochol Nefesh, Rabbi Yehuda is bound by whether you need it, you could have done it before or not done it before, so too Mitoch will be bound by this. Other Rishonim say that they have nothing to do with each other. There are two different issues. Machshirei Ochol Nefesh is something that is in a Hailuchudei Kaiv, Hailuchudei Kaiv. Machshirei Ochol Nefesh is a different category altogether. Here, when you're talking about Mitoch, when you're talking about Lechem, Vanatchem, that's just an extension, expansion of Ochol Nefesh. They'll have the same requirements as Ochol Nefesh, which is, if you want to do it today, and it's a Tzorach Tzat of the Yom Tov, you can do it. Even though technically you could have done it the day before, even though you could have done it 2 days before, but here it's better today, and it's necessary today, then you could do it. You don't have to test whether you could have or couldn't done it by Ochol Nefesh. So Rishon Rishonim, it's a very narrow group of Rishonim, say that Mitoch is bound by Im Efshel Asoto Me'erev Yom Tov or not. That most of Rishonim believe that it's an expansion of Ochol Nefesh itself, and therefore it's not bound by whether you could have done it the day before or not done it the day before. Yeah, he could have got married the day before, but he didn't. He got married today. So he's faced with the issue today. So he does the bi'ah on Yom Tov because that's what he was faced. And Mitoch allows him to do it on Yom Tov. Amar Rabbi Yaakov Yidi. Hore Rabbi Yochanan b'tzaydan. Rabbi Yochanan gave psak halacha asur livol b'tchila b'shabbat. You cannot have a bi'ah tchila b'shabbat. So again, here, until now, we've only seen matirim, people who are matir. Back before, we saw the machloket Rav and Shmuel as to whether it was mutar or not. And every city brought their Maru Da'atra to say it was the Heter. So there's a heavy leaning towards Heter. All of a sudden we have from Rabbi Yochanan a psak that it is Asur. Rabbi Yochanan carries a lot of weight. He's a very, very prominent figure in Eretz Yisrael and in the Misorah. So he carries a lot of weight here. The Gemara says, Umika Hora'a Li'isur. Wait a minute. The terminology you're using is very difficult over here. Since when do we have Hora'a Li'isur? Beautiful Rashi over here. It's a Rashi very similar to the Rashi in Beitza on Daf Bet, where Rashi says the same thing with regards to Koach de Heitera Adif. So Rashi says the same thing there. Over here he says it. Umi kari iser hora'a. To be osir something, is that called a psak halacha? Mishum d'chol adam rashai l'achmir. Any person can be machmir. Va'osir ein zes michut dvarim. And if you're machmir, that doesn't show that you have any understanding, doesn't show that you have any smicha here, which is authority in this matter. Shafilu min ha'safek. Even if you don't know what the psak is, even if you know what you do, it just for safety reasons you go lechumra, you're osir. Aval matir sumeich al shmuato al svarat chachmato. Someone who is a matir over here has to either have a mesora or he has to use his intellect in order to understand and to be matir. Vehi hora'a. That's called a psak alocha. Being machmir is not a psak alocha. Being machmir is safe. That's a safety. When you're matir, the koach de hetera odif, or the idea that a hora'ah is only associated with heter, that's what Rashi says over here. So how can you say that Rabbi Yochanan was hore li'isur? You don't give, they need to give a hora'ah li'isur. You can say asur, or you can give a hora'ah the heter. That's what the problem is, according to Rashi. In. The Gemara says, yes. Vatnan. We have a Mishnah. Horua Beit Hillel, Shetei Nizira, Od Sheva Shanim Acherot. This is a case by Hilni Amalka, who had taken a Neder Nizirut. She was in Chutz Laretz, and the Mishnayot and Nazir say that if you keep your Nizirut in Chutz Laretz, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you have to keep the Nizirut again, because of Tumat Chutz Laretz. So therefore, she was a Nizira for 7 years in Chutz Laretz, and then she came up to Eretz Yisrael, and they paskin for her that she should be a Nizira Od Sheva Shanim. She had to do it again, another 7 years inside of Eretz Yisrael. The story in the Mishnah there is that there was possibly a third problem, which is on the last day of her 7 years, she became Tmeah, and that she had to keep a subsequent 7 years, 21 years of being a Nazira. But anyway, here you have a Hora'ah, but here the Hora'ah is the Isur. Now what's interesting over here, many did say that the Hora'ah over here, even though it was the Isur, because it was associated with a difficult situation. Number one, you're dealing with a Malkah. You're dealing with a queen. To give a Hora'ah to a queen here, the Isur, is not a simple thing. Number two is you're dealing with an extreme amount of time, which is 7 years. And therefore, maybe the word Hora'ah is utilized here. Maybe you wouldn't broadly use it, the Isur. But you would use the word Hora'ah when you're going against the grain. When you're doing something that not everybody else does, or something that is taking on the authority. Taking on the queen, or an extreme case, like the 7 years. So over here, when you say that the Hora'ah by Rabbi Yochanan, maybe the word Hora'ah, and that would be the question here, was used improperly. Because Hora'ah li Isur, do you really use Hora'ah li Isur? Or, even if you do use Hora'ah li Isur, Hora'ah implies a statement or taking a controversial stand. You're going against the grain. Whether it's the Isur or the Heter, doesn't matter. So maybe the word Hora'ah is used inappropriately. And the Gemara here says in, that we do find Hora'ah use the Isur in these controversial statements. Binami, but then Kihad the Tanya. They have to bring a second proof, because the first proof isn't sufficient here, because there it was a controversial situation, and so maybe over there the Hora'ah was used that way. Bechota shidrash nifsak berubo, divrei rabbi, that if something is a treifa, when the chuta shidrash, the spinal column, is broken, is cut, berubo, along its rove, divrei rabbi. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, afilu nikev. Even if there's a puncture in it, a small hole in it, then it is a sore, it's a treifa. Hora Rabbi to Rabbi Yaakov. Over there, Rabbi paskins like Rabbi Yaakov. The Rabbi paskin like Rabbi Yaakov. So here you see Rabbi's giving a Hora'ah like Rabbi Yaakov, who is the Hachmir. He makes it a trefa with a small puncture, not when Rove is missing. Even though he himself was against that position. Though, again, you could argue here that Rabbi was taking a controversial position, which was he was going against his own position, and that's why he had to have a Hora'ah. The same might be true here by Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, we've seen here, is going against the grain of everybody else. Everybody else is paskening leheter. All of a sudden now we have Rabbi Yochanan saying the isur. So maybe that's why he used the word hora'ah over here.
Amar Rav Huna, ein halacha ki Rabbi Yaakov. So despite the fact that Rabbi paskin like Rabbi Yaakov, nevertheless, the Gemara is saying over here, Rav Huna is saying over here, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yaakov.
The Rabbi Yaakov that he's probably talking about here is the Rabbi Yaakov of the Braita. That makes the most sense in the Gemara. There were certain girsaot that read Rabbi Yaakov Baridi. Because Rabbi Yaakov Baridi was the one who said, Hora Rabbi Yochanan b'tzaydan asur le'v'ol b'tchila b'shabbat. It doesn't work out so well because of their not contemporaries. And it doesn't fit into the Gemara well, but just know there was this alternative girsa. But here, Rabbi Yaakov sounds like a continuation of that, the Braita. So then the Gemara says, Nachum b'yitzuk matne hochi. So Rabbi Yaakov, Nachum b'yitzuk had a different version of the story. Amr Rabbi Bo. Shal Rabbi Shmuel ben Yaakov de Mintzur et Rabbi Yochanan b'tzaydan, that he asked him, he queried about this issue to Rabbi Yochanan b'tzaydan, v'ana shameim, and I overheard the conversation. Ma'u livol b'tzkila b'shabbat, v'amale asur, and he said asur. So now, over here, it's not hora'ah, that it was hora'ah l'isur, but rather, he said to him, he gave a psak halacha, that it was asur in this case. V'hilchata mutar livol b'tzkila b'shabbat. Even though the Gemara now brings down from Rabbi Yochanan that it was a sur, nevertheless, the halacha is that it's mutar livol b'tchila b'shabbat, and that's the way that we paskin that it's not a problem of biyah b'tchila b'shabbat. Again, it could be for a number of reasons. It could be whether you hold like Rabbi Shimon, who we generally hold like by davar sheinu mitkavein, but it also could be because you pass on like Rabbi Yehuda, but it's a case of mekalkel, or it's Rabbi Yehuda and it's mekalkel bechabura, which Rabbi Yehuda is matir. So again, there are other ways to get at it besides paskin like Rabbi Shimon. It happens to be that we also paskin like Rabbi Shimon and davar sheinu mitgavein. So it makes it easier that we also are here paskining that it's mutar levov b'tchila b'shabbat, assuming based on what we saw in the Gemara yesterday that it's not a psik reshe, and therefore you're allowed to have bia b'tchila on Shabbat. Right, so now we leave this issue and we move on to what is known as Birkat Erusin and Birkat Chatanin or Sheva Brachot. So Amar Rabbi Chelbo, Amar Rav Huna, Rabbi Avar Bazav, Do Amar Rav, Achat Bitula, V'Achat Almana, Tu'una Bracha. Here's the first statement. The statement is clearly from the perspective of the bride, which is that a Bitula or an Almana is entitled to a Bracha. So now, what that means, we don't know, but we know that they're entitled to a Bracha. Umi Amar Rav Huna Hachi. Can Rav Huna really say this? V'Amar Rav Huna, Almana, Eina Tu'una Bracha. An almana does not require a bracha. When it says lokasha, kan bebachur shinisa almana, kan bealmon shinisa almana. So the solution to the problem right now is the almana can get married to two individuals. An almana can get married to a bachur, is a man who has yet to be married, or she can get married to an almon, someone who already has been in a marriage. So the implications of the Gemara here right now are that almon ve'almana would not require a bracha, whereas a bachur and a almana would require bracha. And the Gemara says, okay, ve'almon shesa almana lo. Based on your conclusion here, that means that a widow that married a widower would not require bracha at all. V'amar Rav Nachman, amar li huna bar natan tana. Minayin the birkat chatanim be'asara. How do I know that Birkat Chatanim, the Sheva Brachot, require 10? Shenemar, because it says in the Pasuk, Vayikach Asara Anashim Miziknei Ha'ir, Vayomer, Shvu Po, Ve'yishvu. So here is a case by Boaz, where he requires that 10 people come in order to take care of this issue with Ruta Moavia, in terms of marrying her. And here the Gemara is assuming that we're talking about Nisuin and the Birkat Chatanim, the Birkat Sheva Brachot. Uboaz Almon, Shanasa Almona Hava. Boaz was an Almon who married an Almana. Now, it's complicated because that's not also true. First of all, Ruta Movia is an Almana, although her previous marriage was when she was non-Jewish. She was only a Gioret, seemingly after she married the children of Elimelech. But the Gemara here still calls her an Almana. That's one, which is interesting in and of itself because that's not so straightforward. Second of all, how do you know that Boaz was an Amon? We have no indication that he's an Amon. Rashi says here, based on the Medrash, that Boaz was Ibtzan, the Shofet, and he had 30 Banim and 30 Banot. Still, that doesn't prove that he's a widow. Proves that he has children, proves that he has another wife, but it doesn't prove that he's an Amon. There are others there to bring the proof from the Midrash that says that when Ruth and Noami return to Beit Lechem, the city is in wonderment, is in a state of tohu, because they can't believe what they look like compared to when they left. The Midrash over there says that's not the reason. The reason was because Boaz was sitting shiva over the loss of his wife. And that's why the whole city was silent, or the whole city was aghast because of the tragedy that had befallen Boaz, that he had lost his wife. So in that case, it would indicate that he was an Amon. But assuming that it's right here, you have a case of an Amon and Almana, and yet Boaz over here is bringing 10 people together in order to have Birkat Chatanim. So now, how do you explain that? Why do you need Birkat Chatanim at all? We're using Boaz as a proof that you need 10 people by Birkat Chatanim. How does he need Birkat Chatanim if there's Amon V'Amana? So the Gemara solution is, Mai Eina Tuna Bracha. What does it mean that you don't need a Bracha? Dam Ravuna Eina Tuna Bracha Kol Zayin. You don't need a Bracha all 7 days. You don't need 7 days of Sheva Bracha. About Yom Echad Tuna Bracha. But you do require a Bracha for 1 day. You do require 1 day of a bracha. So it's clear here from the Gemara that when you're talking about an almon and an almana, there's 1 day of sheva brachot. When you're talking about a bachur and a bitula, there are 7 days of sheva brachot. But we haven't solved yet, and we have to deal with this. The Gemara is going to deal with this now, is what happens if you have a bachur to an almana, or you have an almon to a bitula. What are those in-between stages? So grusha, by the case of grusha, it depends how you view the remarriage. If you view the remarriage as a continuation of the first marriage, then there would be no requirement of Sheva Brachot whatsoever. If you view the remarriage of a grusha to her original husband, if you view over there that the remarriage to this original husband is a new kiddushin and a whole new start of marriage, then you would say there's Sheva Brachot. A grusha in general would have the same din as an almana. All right. Elahad Tanya, what are you going to do with the Braita? The Braita says, Shaktu Chachamim HaTakanat Benot Yisrael, Shesumeach Ima Gimel Yomim. We had the Shaktu Chachamim over here, which was, why does an Almanah get married on a Thursday? We said before, the Betulah gets married on a Wednesday, so Yashkim the Beit Din the next morning. But the Gemara asked about an Almanah, why does she get married on Thursday? So there, the Gemara spoke about two reasons. One is Bracha, because there is the Bracha Pru Revu, so they have the Bia on Thursday night, which is Friday, and that is the Bracha L'Adam of Pru Revu. The other thing was because of Shaktu Chachamim, so that he won't leave the Chuppah together with this woman and be back to work the next morning. So he ensured that he stays for 3 days with his new wife. He has the day of the Chuppah, which is Thursday. He has Friday because of the day of the Bia, and then he has Shabbat, so he has 3 days where he'll be Sameach with Ishto. So over here, what about that Braita? Shaktu Chachamim HaTakanot Benot Yisrael Sheis Sameach Ima Gimel Yomim. B'mai. What's that case? What's the case of an Almanah where we have to ensure that they have 3 days of Simcha?
What's the definition?
Spending time with her. Staying home. Not going to work. Suda and Mishte also. Ibu Bachur. If it's a Bachur, Hamart, didn't you say Shiva? That a Bachur gets 7 days of Simcha, meaning that he gets Sheva Brachot. Iba Amon. If you say by Amon, Amart Yom Echad. You said there's only 1 day of Sheva Brachot. So how are you going to reconcile between the fact that you said that for a Bachor and an Almanah, 7 days of Sheva Brachot, for a Amon and an Almanah, 1 day of Sheva Brachot. So who's getting these 3 days of Simcha? Iba Yitema, Ba'amon Yom Echad Bracha, Ushlosh of the Simcha. Some say that the two are separate. That you have the first day is the day of Bracha, 1 day of Sheva Brachot, but there are 3 days of Simcha. That a Bachor marries an Almanah, 7 days of Sheva Brachot, but 3 days of Simcha. Now, major question amongst the Rishonim here is the Ibai Teima here. Are the two Ibai Teimas mutually exclusive? They're arguing. Or are they reconcilable? Can you bring them together? The Rashba believes that they are arguing over here. And they're arguing about what is going on. And interestingly enough, the Rashba believes that you cannot separate between bracha and simcha. He says that by definition, bracha and simcha have to be the same length. There's no reason to separate or segregate between them. They should always be the same. So here's, so the first answer says that you can have 1 day of bracha and 3 days of simcha. So that would imply that you can have simcha without bracha. The other answer says, the Rashba says, Vipaskin, the two are connected. They're interrelated. The first answer is saying you can have simcha without bracha. The second answer is saying you can only have simcha with bracha. Now you can have bracha without simcha, that's fine, but you can't have simcha without bracha.
And Vipaskin like the second daya, which is the equivalent of the first daya in our Gemara, which says that anytime you have bracha, you must have simcha. Sheva brachot cannot exist without simcha. And that's the way the Rashba passes. He says the two argue. And therefore over here, b'bachur is shiva l'bracha, is shiva l'simcha. What does that imply about an amon and an almanah? That if you have 1 day of bracha and 3 days of simcha, because simcha can exist without the bracha, but bracha cannot exist without the simcha. That were the implications of the Rashba. That's the way the Rashba argues, that these two argue, and therefore we paskin like the second daya. Most of the Rishonim, including the Rambam and many others, see this as two different opinions dealing with two different issues. One is Amon Yom Echad Bracha V'Shalosha Simcha. That's the way we paskin. Amon V'Almanah, 1 day for Sheva Brachot, 3 days of Simcha. Also, Bachur to an Almanah, Shiva L'Bracha Sheva Brachot V'Shalosha Simcha, and 3 for Simcha. The Ran over here brings down the day of the Rashba, disagrees with it, and says, I'll explain to you what's going on over here. The Bracha is determined by the Chatan. The simcha is determined by the kala. And that's what's going to, over here, make the determination about what's happening. Because bracha is associated, it's called birkat chatanim. The bracha is associated with the chatan. I would add to this that there are midrashim, the midrash that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the shushbinin of Adam HaRishon. And as the shushbinin of Adam HaRishon, the Gemara asks, what did he do? What did he do for Adam as his best man? It says there, bracha. He gave him a bracha. So you see over there that there's an association with the chatan and bracha. Because of this, Rav Soloveitchik was want to say that the simcha, the ikra simcha chatan v'kala, being mesameach the chatan and kala, is sheva brachot.
And therefore, if one does not stay for the Sheva Brachot at the end of the wedding, they haven't been Mekayim, the real Simcha, because that's how it was a Kodesh Bracha, was Mesameach Adam HaRishon, which was by giving him a Bracha. But there we see that the Bracha is associated with the Chatan. In terms of the Simcha being associated with the Kala, we see that by the case of going to the army. The Torah says that when it comes to exemptions from the army, someone who got married and has a new wife is exempted from the army for Shana Rishona, for the first year, because he's Vesameach Ishto. He has to make his wife happy. He has to have Simcha with his wife. So we see the fact that the Simcha is associated with the Kala. So you have the Bracha associated with the Chatan and the Simcha associated with the Kala. Therefore, when you have a Bachur and Bachura, which is you have a young man and Betula to get married, then you're going to have 7 days of Sheva Brachot, as well as 7 days of Simcha. When you have an Almon and an Almana that get together, over there you're going to have 1 day of Sheva Brachot, because the Amon, the husband, is the decisive factor over here. The Isha, you're going to have 3 days of Simcha, because she's the decisive factor with Simcha. Since she's an Almana, there's 3 days of Simcha. And in the case of Bachur to an Almana, over there, the Bachur is the one who determines the Sheva Brachot, so 7 days of Sheva Brachot. The Almana, the woman, determines the Simcha. She's an Almana, 3 days of Simcha. So that's why over there, you're going to have 7 days of Sheva Brachot, 3 days of Simcha. The only question becomes, in the case where it's Amon that marries a Betula. The Gemara did not address that issue over here at all, but then Amon that marries a Betula. Later on in the Gemara, it's going to sound like anytime there's a Betula, you get Sheva Brachot. There, it breaks down what the Ran says. Because we said that the Sheva Brachot are determined by the man, and the Simcha by the woman. So over there, when an Almon marries a Betula, yes, there should be 7 days of Simcha. But why should there be Sheva Brachot for 7 days? It should only be 1 day, because he's the determining factor. So over there, the Ran says that it's a psychological thing. The Almon is so happy that he got a Betula. It's as if he, like a feather in his cap, that even though he was an Almon, he was still able to win over and get a Betula, that they would give him Sheva Brachot because of that extra status. And that's the way the Ran explains this Gemara over here. So that would give us all the different permutations. Again, Bachur and Bachura, the case where they're both first marriage, Sheva Brachot, 7 days of Simcha. Case where it's both a second marriage, 1 day of Sheva Brachot, 3 days of Simcha. In the case where it's a Bachur and an Almana, we pass in this way, this is the way the Ran and most of the Rishonim say, then you have Shiva LeBracha, Shlosha l'simcha. You have seven brachot for 7 days and 3 days of simcha. And in the case of Amon, to a tulav of 7 days of sheva brachot and 7 days of simcha, the only argument, again, with the Rashba is about bachur to an almana, shiva l'bracha, sheva brachot, shlosha l'simcha, and three for simcha. Over there, can you have 7 days of sheva brachot, simcha for 3 days? The Ran says no problem with that, because one's driven by the chatan, one's driven by the kala. The Rashba sees them as being equated. He says there's no way you can have that. If there are 7 days of Sheva Brachot, there are also 7 days of Simcha. The two are connected over here, at least with regards to the aspect of Sheva Brachot. Now, Sheva Brachot can't exist without the Simcha, but the Simcha can exist without the Sheva Brachot. Right, so now the Gemara continues, mevarchim lebetula shiva uli amanah yom echad. We have Sheva Brachot for a betula is 7 days, and for an amanah it is 1 day. My love, afilu amanah shini seid lebachur, makes it sound like all amanot are this way. They only get 1 day, even if she marries a bachur. Lo, le'almon, that's only when she marries a widower. Aval lebachur, if she marries a first marriage for the husband, my, what would be the din? Shiva, there'll be 7 days. Yochi litnei mivarchim lebetula shiva, uli almanah. Why don't you say it shini seid lebachur? Why don't you may parse or have the bride to read this way? That you have mivarchim lebetula shiva. For a betula, you get 7 days. Uli amanah, should you say the bachur? And the same is true for an amanah that marries a bachur, marries a man who is his first wedding. The amanah, yom echad. And then, on the other hand, an amanah, which is 1 day, which is with an amon. Mar says, milta de psik toktani. Mishnayot, Tanaic works, brightot, only tell you things that are definitive. They don't try to tell you things that have nuances to them. So, deleka betula de batzra mishiva. Number one is, no betula has less than sheva brachot. That's what I said before here. When an amon marries a betula, you get sheva brachot. And a case where a bachur marries a betula, sheva brachot no matter one. Veleka almana, the batzer meyom echad. And there's no almana that's less than 1 day. There's an almana that might be more than 1 day, but there's an almana no less than 1 day. An almana to an amon is 1 day. An almana to a bachur will have 7 days, but it's not less than 1 day. So the Braita said, that things that were psika, things that were definitive. So it seems over here that the determination is bitula. Some suggest over here that it's determined by almanah. So the question is, which do you put more emphasis on? Do you put the emphasis on the bitula side or on the almanah side? If you put emphasis on the bitula side, that means that a woman who was married and never consummated the marriage would still be entitled to sheva brachot. If you put the emphasis on almanah, she is an almanah, and therefore she would not be entitled to sheva brachot as if she wasn't married before because she is an almanah. I think the Rambam and others lean in favor of saying that she has a din of a bitula because the Gemara here uses bitula in the Braita. Okay, now, Gufa. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Lihuna Bar Natan. Tana, minayin the birchat katanim basara. How do you know that sheva brachot require 10? Now, in general, when you require 10 people for something, there are three different reasons you can require 10 people. You can require 10 people because it's a davar shebikdusha. Since it's a davar shebikdusha, you require 10, you need a minion. It could be you require 10 because orach ara. It would be inappropriate to do this with less than 10. The Gemara uses such a concept in the Gemara and Brachot with regards to Zimun. How do you know that you need 10 for a Zimun to say Elokeinu? Gemara says it would be lav orach ara to say Elokeinu with less than 10. It would be inappropriate to say it with less than 10. And then you also have the possibility of presume, is to make it a public issue. Sometimes we gather 10 people together in order to publicize an issue. We're going to see that with the guards to Shmuel, that he brings together people in order to publicize something. He says, bring me 10 people, so it becomes a public issue. So over here, it's probably clear that the issue is not publicity. When we're dealing with Birkat Chatanim, we don't need 10 people in order to publicize the fact that there's Birkat Chatanim. So it's one of the two, which is Birkat Chatanim driven by the fact that it's a davar shebikdusha, and therefore we require 10? Or is Birkat Chatanim require 10 because it's lav orach ara? It would be inappropriate to not have 10 people. The other nafkamina here might be with a number of items. One is, are we talking about 10 people besides the chatan or 10 people including the chatan? If it's a davar shebikdusha, then you would require 10 people including the chatan because the chatan counts towards the minyan. The other hand, if it's lav orach ara, we would assume that it means you need 10 people besides the chatan because it would be inappropriate to have birkat chatanim for the chatan without 10 people being there. So you would require the presence of 10 in order to have it be orach ara. So that might be, as we're going to see in a second, the nafkamina over here, as to whether you need 11 or 10 based on the psukim or the proof psukim they bring. Another nafkamina between whether the 10 here is davar shebikdusha or the 10 here is orach ara might be what you do in the case where you don't have a minion. If it's a davar shebikdusha and requires 10, if you don't have a minion, you can't do it. On the other hand, if you believe that asara is orach ara, that's a normal way to do things, then maybe possibly when you don't have a minion, you could still do the brachot, even though that's not the optimal way to do it. It's only the chatchilo that you should do it that way. But b'diavad, you should be able to do it even without a minion. So we'll see that more when we get later on into the sugya of Birkat Nisuin. You have a brachot, as to which brachot apply when you have a minion, when you don't have a minion. And certain brachot, like the Asher Bara, are machloket bishonim, as to whether when you don't have a minion, are you able to say that bracha. The last nafkamina might be, who counts towards the number? It's clear if it's a davar shebikdusha that the only people count are men over the age of 13. If it's for orach ara, there it might have a broader definition. It's brought down, the halacha and the Rambam codifies this, that avadim and ktanim are not allowed to be mitztaref for birkat chatanim. What he doesn't mention over there is nashim, women. So therefore there is a machloket about what the Rambam's daya is with regards to nashim. Maybe women should count towards Birkat Chatanim because it's an issue of Orach Ara. On the other hand, if you believe that Birkat Chatanim is a davar shebikdusha, then you could not include women for sure. And it might be that the Rambam codified it and said, Avadim and Chatanim don't count, and obviously women don't count towards this, and that's why he didn't write women. But there is some machloket there with regards to whether women count towards this or not. Oh, very good. Alright, so there might be an additional dimension, which is that you might be able to separate between Sheva Brachot at the Chuppah versus Sheva Brachot in the Sudot afterwards. And it might be that one is a Davar Shebikdusha, and one is Lav Orach Ara. Might be that they are different in their nature. We always assume that they're all the same, that the same type of Sheva Brachot, and therefore they all have the same dinim. But it's possible, like you're suggesting, that we could divide and say those that by the Chuppah are Davar Shebikdusha. They're in a different rubric, they're in a different framework, they're in the framework of the Nisuin itself. Whereas the Sheva Brachot that are found by the Sudot or a different type of Sheva Brachot. And it might be that the Sheva Brachot by Nisuin are giving definition to the Nisuin, or are part of the Sheva Chodaya of the Nisuin, or are maybe even possibly Birkat HaMitzvah for the Nisuin. Whereas the Sheva Brachot that are associated with the Seudot afterwards and the days afterwards are really always a reflection of Simcha. It's part of the Simcha, because clearly that's what's going on over there, and those Sheva Brachot might be defined differently than those at the Chuppah. Now we bring the proof text to why we have Asara. Here the Gemara brings two proof texts. So that is from the case of Boaz that we bring the proof. Over there, it would seem that number one, first of all, Boaz is gathering together 10 people besides himself. That's number one. Number two is, it seems here that Boaz is doing this because it is Orach Aroh. We're not doing this because it's a Davar Shebikdusha. He's doing it because that would be the proper way to conduct oneself. And therefore, you would suggest that the 10 over here is based on Orach Aroh, and besides the Chatan. On the other hand, Rabbi Boaz Mar Meocha, it's from here. Mimakelot, Baruch Elokim, Hashem Mimkor Yisrael. So that Makelot, today Makela means a choir. Makelot means the multitudes will give bracha to God. Shem Mimkor Yisrael, from the, and here's the play on the word here, Mikor Yisrael, the source of Israel. But here the Gemara is playing on Mikor. Mikor is another word for uterus. So Mimkor Yisrael means Brikata Mikor, or a bracha for that which is going to generate Mikor. V'hainu Asara. That's 10 people, as Rashi says, because the word Kahal, Ben Kahal Pachot Me'eda, and a Kahal is no less than an Eda, and an Eda is at minimum 10. And even though it says Makelot in plural, Tosafot says, nevertheless, we never find a distinction between 10 and 20. So there's no reason to think 10 or 20 instead of 10. Or, he says that in Yerushalmi, it says Makelot is spelled Chaser, and therefore they say it's only 10 and not 20 over here. From this second pasuk, it seems much more that we're indicating that it's a Dover Shibik Dusha, and the requirement of the 10 people here is because it's a Dover Keshuya, and it would include the Chatan. And here the bracha is associated with the Mekor, which is the ultimate goal of the marriage, which is Vayulu Basar Echad. And therefore this bracha is associated with the Mekor, is associated with marriage. Rav Nachman, I cried to Rabbi Yabohu, my Dorish Bey. Rav Nachman, who uses, brings the Pasuk of Boaz, what does he do with the Pasuk of Makelot? He needs it like the Braita. Ya Rabbi Meomer, Minayin Shafilu Ubrim Shemimei Iman Amru Shira Layam. How do we know that the Ubarim that were in their mother's wombs, that they sang Shira when they crossed through the Yam Suf? Shenemar Makelot Baruch Elokim Hashem Mimkor Yisrael. So he quotes this Pasuk, the Perek Tehillim, it's not clear what it's speaking about, but Chazal Darshanit to happen to be speaking about the Kriyat Yam Suf. And the Pasuk prior to this Pasuk talks about Simcha, celebration, tupot, and drums. So it was clear that we're talking about some sort of simcha or celebration that's associated here. Vidach, imkein lemakra mibeten. Why, I could have used the term mibeten, that the child's in the stomach. My mikor. Why does it use the term mikor? Aliske mikor. To tell you, this is also a din with regards to mikor, the din of nisuin. Rabbi Bohu, by Krah, the Rabbi Nachman, Mandarishbei. Rabbi Bohu brings the pasuk of makelot. What does he do with the pasuk by Boaz? I won't buy me by the midrash. That's to teach the din of Amoni velo Amonit, Moavi velo Moavit. Boaz wanted to gather the people together to publicize this psak halacha. The salkadatcha lebracha. If he was bringing them together for bracha, osagia delav zekenim. Why do you have to bring the ziknei here? Why couldn't he bring anybody here? Why is there a requirement of zekenim? Vidach. Isagadatcha the midrash. Osagia delav asara. If you're saying that only here are coming to teach the halacha that amoni below amonit, movia below avit, why do you need 10 there? Mar says, you do need 10, the presume milta, in order to publicize the issue. Kedamar le Shmuel the Rabbi Chana Bagta, like Shmuel said to Rabbi Chana Bagta. Now here, Bagta, Rashi over here says Bagta means that he's from Baghdad. Whereas in the Gemara in Yevamot, he brought another interpretation, which is he was Balagada. Poke vitali be'asira, go out and gather together for me 10 people. And I'm going to say in front of them, someone who grants ownership of something to an ubar, there is a kinyan. The Gemara here just concludes, just know that the halacha is, even though Shmuel publicized it and did this, it nevertheless, the halacha is not this way, and a mezakel ubar is lo kana. Tosafot over here discusses an interesting dynamic within Shmuel's Shita, and that is, in general, when we talk about Davar Shelo Ba Le'olam, things that are yet to exist in the world, the Gemara believes, according to most Deyot, that you are unable to acquire things that have yet to exist, and you cannot grant ownership to things that have yet to exist. Rabbi Meir is the exception to that rule. We saw Rabbi Meir back in Yevamot, that Rabbi Meir says that you can be koneh davar shelo ba le'olam. You're able to create a kinyan on something that has yet to come to the world. Over there, the Gemara indicates that even Rabbi Meir, who believes that you can be koneh davar shelo ba le'olam, that you can acquire something that has yet to come to the world, that's yet in existence, nevertheless, you cannot give acquisition to something that yet exists. You cannot have something that yet to exist acquire. So it seems obvious over here that if you hold that it's impossible to acquire things that have yet to exist, then certainly you would believe that you cannot grant ownership to things that have yet to exist. Yet over here, Shmuel has exactly that opinion. Shmuel believes, not like Rabbi Meir, that you cannot be koneh davar shelo ba le'olam. Says it's impossible to acquire things that have yet to exist. On the other hand, Shmuel over here says that an ubar can make acquisitions. And since the ubar can make acquisitions, he has the exact opposite opinion. So Tosafot says that that shita that says that Rabbi Meir, who holds that you can acquire things that have yet to exist, but you can't grant ownership to things that have yet to exist, that is a day amongst the Amoraim. And Shmuel disagrees with that logic. And he brings us other individuals that also defy that logic and say that that's not true. You can have things that have yet to exist in the world acquire things, even though you cannot acquire things that have yet to come to the world. So that's one solution to the problem over here, to say that Shmuel differentiates. The other solution to the problem is that maybe Shmuel is not talking about something that has yet to come to the world over here. And Ubar exists. The question is, how much does he exist? Does he exist independent of his mother or not? If you don't see him as existing independent of his mother, then when you grant ownership to the Ubar, it's as if you're granting ownership to an entity that has yet to exist. On the other hand, if you believe that the Ubar has a certain semblance outside of his mother, that he has some sort of existence, then maybe what Shmuel is saying over here is, yes, I agree that when things don't exist in the world, you can't acquire them, you can't grant them ownership. But the Ubar does exist. It may not exist in the way that we know in terms of walking on its own, existing on its own, but it still has, it's still here in the world. And since it's here in the world, you can grant him ownership even though he is still in his mother's womb. So that might be another way to reconcile Shmuel's opinion as to the fact that he believes you cannot acquire things that don't exist, but you can grant ownership to Ubar. So either it's because, as Tosfot says, you can separate between the two items, or maybe it's because Shmuel's not saying that you can grant ownership to things that don't exist. If they really don't exist, Shmuel would agree. The reason that you can grant the ownership over here is because it's a Ubar, and a Ubar does exist. Tan Rabbanan, mivarchim birkat chatanim bebeit chatanim. You say the birkat chatanim in the house of the chatan, meaning that at the chupa, or associated with the chupa, as Rashi says, shkenich nasa the chupa nisuin. Rabbi Yehuda omer, af bebeit erusin. Mivarchin otai. Even in the beit erusin, when they did the kiddushin and the erusin, again, a year before they did nisuin, you can make the brachot then. Amar Abaye ubi Yehuda shanu. That Rabbi Yehuda's statement is only speaking in Yehuda. Because in Yehuda, they used to allow the couple to be alone. And since the couple could be alone, they did it. According to Rashi, they did it in order, the gospel, in order that they should become familiar with each other, comfortable with each other. And that comfort would lead to an easier transition in the Nisuin. But there's also this fear or possibility that Bia might take place then because we allow them to be mityached. And since we allow them to be tyached and there could be Bia, there's a possibility that Nisuin, in a sense, might take place. So we don't want this to be a Biyav Znut. We'd rather be a Biyav Nisuin. And therefore, we have the Birkat Nisuin associated with the Erusin and not with the Nisuin. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that they actually intentionally put them together with the assumption they would have Biyav. And this was to counteract this idea that the Hegmon would be Boel B'tula Tchila. So the Gzeirah, that the Hegmon used to take all the Ptulot and to sleep with them before they got married. So in order to prevent that problem in Yehuda, what they used to do was allow the women to be mityached with their husbands after the Erusin, in order that he would have Biyah with her, so that she would not be a bitulah when she reached the chuppah, and there wouldn't be this issue of the Gzeirah. So since they're going to allow Biyah, or they're even encouraging Biyah in this case, We want to have the Birkat Nisuin associated with the Erusin because it's actually going to turn out to be Nisuin as well. The last possibility is what Rashi quotes over here as well, which is Kala below bracha, asur lebala kinida. That a kala without a bracha is asur to her husband like a nida. And therefore you have to make the Birkat Chatanim mitchila. You have to make the Birkat Chatanim beforehand in order to be matir, the yichud that's going to take place over here. Nothing to do with the bia. Maybe bia will result. But the yichud itself is problematic because they have yet to have bia. In order to be matir, the yichud over here, we need the bracha as a prerequisite for allowing the yichud. And so those are the three possibilities as to why in Yehuda they would make the birkat chatanim at the time of the erusim because they were going to allow the hatan v'kala to be mityachei. Tani yidach, we have another braita that says, mevarchim birkat chatanim v'beit chatanim, birkat asurim v'beit erusim. That sheva brachot are said at the Beit Chatanim, which is at the Chuppah. Ubirkat Erusin, the bracha that is associated with Erusin, is said at the time of the Erusin or the Kiddushin. Birkat Erusin, my mevarech. When you make the bracha Birkat Erusin, what is the bracha that you make then? Ravin baravado, Rabu baravado, Tarvayu mishmei de Rav Yehuda, Amrei, Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav, Vitzivanu al arayot, ve'asar lanu et arutzot, ve'hitir lanu et nisuot. Our girsa involves the word lanu as well. Al yedei chupa v'kiddushin. Rav Acha brei de Rava mesayim ba mishmei de Rav Yehuda. Baruch ata Hashem mikadesh Yisrael. Al yedei chupa v'kiddushin. Man de lo chotim, the one who doesn't have a concluding bracha here, midei avei birkat haperot or birkat haMitzvah. Because it's similar to Birkat HaPeirot and Birkat HaMitzvah, which have an opening, Baruch, and that's it. Man dechotim, mi deyave kiddusha. The one who says that you have a chatimah here, it's similar to kiddush on Friday night. We begin with a bracha, and we end with a bracha. In addition, Rashi notes over here, the reason that you do a chatimah by the Birkat Erusin, because it's doma the kiddush, is not because it's really like kiddush, but rather because it uses the same terminology of kiddusha. And since it's Kiddusha, the paradigm for Kiddusha is Kiddush, and that's why you do a Chatima. Tosafot disagrees and says, what are you talking about? That has nothing to do with it. The reason by Kiddush you have a Chatima, Rashi himself says this in the Gemara and Brachot, is because there are two topics in the Bracha of Kiddush. And so too over here, by Birkat Erusin, it's longer than a typical Bracha. It seemingly has multiple topics in it. And because of that, we were going to make a Chatima. Rashi's Shita is probably that in Birkat Erusin, there really aren't two topics. There is a Chuppah and Kiddushin, which both are part and parcel of the marriage process. So there's really only one topic. So it's not really the issue of two topics or one topic, but rather the paradigm of Kiddusha. Tosfot, on the other hand, says it's a practical consideration of that it's a long bracha. Therefore, we have a Chatimah, similar to the Kiddush on Shabbat.
So there are a number of issues that need to be brought up here. First of all, there are numerous girsot, which we'll try to deal with at the end. But the first question is, what type of bracha are we talking about over here? This is Birkat Erusin. And is Birkat Erusin a Birkat HaMitzvah? Which is, here we're making a bracha on the mitzvah of Kiddushin or the mitzvah of Erusin. Or is the bracha here, Birkat Erusin, a bracha, Birkat Shevach Vehoda'ah? It's a bracha of giving praise and thanks to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, that mainly will depend on whether you think that Erusin or Kiddushin is a mitzvah. If you think that Kiddushin Erusin is a mitzvah, then in all likelihood you're going to think that the bracha or the Birkat Erusin over here is a Birkat HaMitzvah. It has the framework of Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotah v'tzivanu, which makes it sound like there is a mitzvah that we are dealing with over here. Number two is, every mitzvah in general, we have a Birkat HaMitzvah that is associated with it. So you think that Erusin is a mitzvah, we'd assume there's a bracha associated with it. The one problem is that we make Birkat Erusin after the Erusin or after the Kiddushin. Most Birkat HaMitzvot, we say over the Asiyatan. We say them prior to doing or engaging the activity of the mitzvah. Over here, we're making it after the fact. So why would you call it a Birkat HaMitzvah if it's after the fact? Birkat Shevach Hodah, generally when you're talking about brachot that are praise or thanks to Hashem, they are after the fact, not before the fact. So that would seem to indicate that we're talking about a Birkat Shevach Hodah over here. So those that believe that it's a Birkat HaMitzvah have to say the reason we do this Birkat HaMitzvah afterwards is because we're not certain that the mitzvah is going to be done over here. Again, he's proposing marriage to this woman. If the woman doesn't accept, the mitzvah doesn't happen.
It's only the acceptance of the woman that allows the mitzvah to go through. So how can you make a bracha bigger than Rishonim with the uncertainty as to whether there actually is going to be Erusin or Kiddushin here? Only once the woman has accepted the Erusin or the Kiddushin, then we can make the bracha a mitzvah, because we know for certain a mitzvah was done over here. That's according to those that say that it is a birkat mitzvah, and those that believe that erusin is a mitzvah. The Rosh, who says that birkat erusin is a birkat hoda'ah, shevach hoda'ah, there is no mitzvah of erusin. Since there's no mitzvah of erusin, therefore, the bracha here must be a bracha, birkat shevach vehoda'ah. It must be a bracha giving thanks to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it makes sense then why we say it after the erusin or after the kiddushin. Another nafkamina between whether it is a birkat mitzvah or a birkat shevach hodiah, whether you have to stand for it. In general, we have the minog to stand whenever we say a birkat mitzvah. And if it was that birkat erusin was a birkat mitzvah, then you would have to stand up for the birkat mitzvah. On the other hand, if it's a birkat shevach hodiah, there would be no requirement to stand up. You could sit down. The question you have to ask is the formulation of the bracha, which says, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav. So interestingly enough, Rashi says over here that v'asur lanu et arusot, that the arusot are asur to us, is only a din derabonon, that they are asurim. And on a din derabonon, you can also say asher kiddushanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu, like we do by Ner Chanukah. And then when the Gemara compares the birkat erusin to birkat peirot and birkat mitzvah, the easiest way to say it is, well, erusin is a birkat mitzvah like birkat mitzvah. On the other hand, Rashi says the kevan kula chad hodohi. It's all one big hoda'ah. So Rashi seems to imply over here that the bracha, even if you compare it to a birkat mitzvah, is not a birkat mitzvah. It's a birkat hoda'ah. It's just one big hoda'ah. And since it's one big hoda'ah, therefore you don't have to have a chatima to the bracha. But sounds from Rashi, clear from the Rosh, that we're talking about a birkat shevach v'hoda'ah over here. Now, if you're talking about birkat mitzvot, it's difficult, and if you're talking about birkat shevach hoda'ah, it's also difficult, the lashon or the language that is here. So let's go through pieces of the language, which is, the first one is, asur lanu et arusot. We never make a bracha on a mitzvah lo taseh. Over here, it seems that we're making a bracha of asur lanu et arusot, that we are oser lanu the arusot. So Rashi already says that, yes, we're making a bracha on the Isser of Arusot, that's an Isser derabanan, and we're making a bracha on that Isser derabanan. So again, most Rishonim believe, like Rashi, that Asur lanu et arusot is that they were gazru or yichud shel pnuya, v'af arusah lo yitiru ad shetikanes t'chupa. And therefore, the bracha over here is about the distance that is created before the heter ensues from the nisuin. There are those that disagree with Rashi and say that the Isser of the Arusot is a din doraito. That means doraito, there's also an iser against the arusot for the husband. Shita Yishana quotes the Abu Draham. It says that it is osur doraito because of eshet ish to himself. That this woman is an eshet ish, not only to the world at a whole, after kiddushin erusin, but also eshet ish to the husband himself. On the other hand, you could argue, as we mentioned earlier, in the name of Aaron Lichtenstein, that the problem of eshet ish is not simply a problem of an extramarital affair, but a problem of begida, of betrayal, a lack of loyalty to the husband. And in that case, that's not really relevant to the husband himself, of a lack of loyalty or betrayal, if it's he himself that's engaging with the arusa. And therefore, it would be hard to argue that Eish and Ish would apply to the husband himself, like the Abu Draham is suggesting. On the other hand, the Raivud takes a somewhat middle approach, which is that certain dinim apply to Arusa midoraita. For instance, Yerusha already applies from the time that a woman is an Arusa. Technically, midoraita, truma can be eaten by an Arusa that's getting married to a Kohen. The punishment for an Arusa is different than that of a single woman who engages with an extramarital affair. So there are dinim that change midoraita, and that's what it means, asalanu et arusot, that certain Doraita dinim are triggered by the erusin. And my Rebbe, Rebbe Rosenzweig, suggested that you can only have dinim doraita that are triggered by a relationship that's doraita. You can't have a relationship that's not minatorah generate outcomes or dinim that are doraita. And therefore, maybe even according to the Raivud, if there are certain dinim that are triggered here midoraita, that means that there's also a certain level of relationship that generates those dinim doraita. But there are others who look at Vasalanu et Arusot not as the simply the narrow definition of the Isser of Arusot, but rather as Erusin being the vehicle to get to a proper marriage. And therefore, Vasalanu et Arusot is not looking at the negative aspect of the Arusot, but rather that this is the stepping stone in building a proper marriage through Kedusha. Vasalanu et Arusot is not simply guidance that we're not allowed to get together with Arusot, but it's a general guidance about interactions or intimate interactions between a husband and a wife, between any parties that the Torah governs, both on the negative side and on the positive side. More along the lines of what the Ramban says in Kedoshim Tiyu, that it's not just a free-for-all, that even within the mitzvot and even within intimate relationships, the Torah has what to say about this, and it guides us of how to give framework to that which we are doing.
And the Girsa of the Rambam, on the other hand, here is v'hivdilanu min ha'arayot instead of v'tzivanu min ha'arayot, to overcome that problem of where do we ever find a tzivoy that deals with a negative commandment. And therefore, it's v'hivdilanu min ha'arayot, and that is the Nusach in Taiman today, that their Birkat Erusin begins v'hivdilanu min ha'arayot.
And if you believe that it is a Birkat Shevach v'hoda'ah, then v'tzivanu makes a lot of sense here, because the v'tzivanu is that we have this basis or these mitzvot that make us kadosh. Then, v'hitir lanu et nisuot, and they were matir lanu nisuot. Now, in order to avoid any ambiguity about this, the Rabbeinu Tam in Tosafot over here says that we say, v'hitir lanu et nisuot lanu. We add in the extra word lanu to make it clear that the nisuot that we're talking about here are nisuot that came through the arusa before, and then are mutar yidei chupa v'kiddushin. And not simply v'hitir lanu et nisuot, just for a clarification of the language. And there are girsot amongst the Rishonim that leave out v'hitir lanu et nisuot completely.
And the Rav Hai Gon actually leaves out the word nisuot and says v'hitiran lanu. And the Rishonim like that girsot.
And so the Ritva and the Rashba did not like this language of v'hitir lanu et nisuot, because they say nisuin doesn't do anything more than Erusin. It's just a completion of the process of Erusin or Kiddushin. And therefore, Hitir Lanu et Nisuot, it seems to be a formulation that they didn't love.
But the Minhag never was nitpashay to go along with that girso.
Whereas for the Rambam and others who think that there's an Isur when the Arusa, there's a real Isur over here for the husband with the Arusa, then Hitir Lanu et Nisuot is the next stage. At first, we create a certain amount of distance between the husband and the woman, Kiddusha, and then v'hitir lanu et nisuot. After that, we grant a heter, meaning that the nisuin now allows them to come back together. And this is all accomplished ayidei chupa v'kiddushin. Accomplished through chupa v'kiddushin. So now over here, always the question is asked, why does chupa come before kiddushin? Because the easiest way to explain it is that the matara, the purpose of marriage is nisuin, is to get to the point where they're fully married, and they can reproduce together. How is that done? That is done ayidei kiddushin. That is done by the kiddushin. The kiddushin is a stepping stone. It is actually, according to the Rambam, if you read the Rambam, beginning of Hilchot Ishut, it is the chiddush of the Torah. The chiddush of the Torah is that we add in kiddushin before the nisuin. And that's what's meant over here, that ayidei chupa v'kiddushin, that the chupa is guided or within the framework of kiddushin. And therefore, there is a girsa that is still used today amongst the Sfaradim, which is that they say ayidei chupa b'kiddushin and not v'kiddushin, but rather it's chupa through kiddushin. Because that's exactly what we're trying to state over here, that the chupa here was generated through a process of kiddushin. And then we conclude, mikadesh Yisrael, ayidei chupa b'kiddushin. Over here, the Rambam's girsa is simply mikadesh Yisrael, which the Taimanim until today still use that girsa of Mikadesh Yisrael, whereas the girsa that most Sfaradim and Ashkenazim use is Mikadesh Yisrael, Ayidei Chupa V'Kiddushin for the Ashkenazim, or for the Sfaradim, Mikadesh Yisrael Ayidei Chupa B'Kiddushin. There was a girsa that the Ran brings in the name of the Ramban and the Rav Hai Gon, that you have to say even Mikadesh Amo Yisrael, the Amo Yisrael, Ayidei chupa v'kiddushin, which actually makes it even more broad, the statement over here of Mekadesh Yisrael. It's not simply a Kedushat Yisrael, but it's a Mekadesh Amo Yisrael, that Hashem is Mekadesh the nation through the chupa v'kiddushin of these individuals. And that really, as my Rebbe Rav Rotzenzweig says, it gives us a different view or perspective on marriage. If you were to say, Mikadesh Moisrael, Dei Chupa B'Kiddushin, is that we see this as being a microcosm of Kiddushat Yisrael, but we also see that it gives us an additional dimension of Kiddushat Yisrael, because when couples get married, those are the building blocks of Klal Yisrael, and the entire nation has a vested interest in this. So much so that the din is in Sefer Dvarim, that when a couple first gets married, he's exempt from the army for the first year, because we want him to be together with his wife. I mean that we have a vested interest as a Klal, as an Am together, to see the success of this marriage, to see that they reproduce and they ensure the continuation of our Am B'Kedusha. Therefore, we're willing as a national Tzai to grant him the exemption from the army for that period of time, because we're so invested in this marriage as an Am Yisrael, not just because of these individuals, but an Am Yisrael as a whole. And therefore, you could understand Mikadesh Mo Yisrael Yedei Chupa B'Kedushin. But even if we don't have that girsa, it still gives you a different perspective on what it means to be Mikadesh Yisrael Yedei Chupa V'Kiddushin. And we know that there are two levels of Kiddushat Yisrael that people can attain. Rav Soloveitchik was famous for formulating in this way, that there is Kiddushat Yisrael, which is every Jew through Kabbalat Olam Mitzvot becomes a part of Klal Yisrael, becomes a Jew. But that does not allow them to marry into the Kahal. That doesn't allow them to join Klal Yisrael. The ability to marry into Klal Yisrael is once they've been elevated and accepted the Kiddushat Yisrael to the point where now they are Mutar B'Kahal. So many believe that that is generated by the Tvilah, by the going to the mikveh. Everybody agrees you need a Beit Din with regards to Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot. There's a question of, do you need a Beit Din for the Tvilah itself? Tosafot says you don't need it for the Tvilah itself, whereas the Rif believes you do need it for the Tvilah. And that might have to do with this additional dimension that the Tvilah brings up or elevates the person to be able to marry into the Kahal. Because we find other individuals who convert, but never attain the status of being able to marry into the Kahal. For instance, Givonim, Kutim, who converted, who were accepted amongst Klal Yisrael, but they never attained that status of being allowed to marry amongst Klal Yisrael. So we see there's an additional dimension of Kedusha associated with Klal Yisrael that allows people to marry and be a part of the continuation of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Mikadesh Mo Yisrael is not only that there's Kedushat Yisrael in Chupa Kiddushin, because as the Rambam formulates in the beginning of Hilchot Yishuv, that the innovation of Kiddushin is a part and parcel of what makes us Kadosh Ka'am Yisrael. But on top of that, this is a fundamental part of Kiddushat Yisrael. First of all, that we as an Am have a vested interest in seeing marriages succeed B'Kiddusha and have them procreate, therefore we're willing to invest in it. But more importantly, there's a status of Kiddusha that allows individuals to marry amongst Klal Yisrael. And that's part and parcel of Kiddushat Yisrael. That's an additional aspect of Kiddushat Yisrael. And that's why we would end the bracha as Mikadesh Mo Yisrael Yedei Chupa V'Kiddushin. Addition to that, why we put the Chupa before the Kiddushin here, the Ritva says it's because the Chupa is Matir the Arusa. So that removes what was Asur beforehand. So that's why we put the Chupa before the Kiddushin. Whereas the Rashbo seems to indicate that the Iker Mitzvah here is the Mitzvah Arusin, but it doesn't get finished until the Nisuin. So the Nisuin is the completion of the Erusin. And that's why we say, Yedei Chupa B'Kiddushin, because Chupa is the completion of that process that began with the Kiddushin. On the other hand, the Ra'ah, the Me'iri, and the Rav Avraham ben Rambam in his father's work as to why he does certain things, claim that the Nisuin is the Ikar Mitzvah, and the Erusin is just the Hechitimsa, or the Hatchala, the beginning of the process. And that's why we say, Yedei Chupa V'Kiddushin, because Chupa is the Iker Mitzvah. Kiddushin is just a Hechitimtza to get to the Chupa. On the other hand, the Ramban and the Ran believe that both are equal mitzvot. Chupa and Kiddushin are equal mitzvot. So then why do we put Chupa before Kiddushin? Because again, the ultimate goal is Chupa. And Chupa is created through the process beginning with Kiddushin. Now the same question arises with regards to the Birkat Nisuin as well, as to whether it's a Birkat Mitzvah, Birkat Shevev Koda, or something else. We will try to discuss it more when we deal with the Birkat Nisuin, but there's a possibility if you think Nisuin is a mitzvah, that Birkat Nisuin would also be a Birkat HaMitzvah. There's another possibility that if you think that there is no mitzvah in Nisuin, the ultimate mitzvah is Pru Revu, like the Rosh, that Birkat Nisuin are also Shevach Hodaya. And there's another possibility which my Rebbe Rav Rosenzweig suggested, is that Birkat Nisuin is a framework. Many times where we do an activity or an act that seems to be what we call a natural act, like eating, or here in the case of Yichud or Nisuin, which, again, animals participate in, non-Jews participate in, and Jews participate in, then what gives it a dimension of Kiddushah? How do we give it a framework of Kiddushah? And that might be what the Birkat Nisuin is all about, is creating a framework in which we understand the meaning of the Yichud over here. We understand the meaning of the Chuppah and the Nisuin over here. It's the Birkat Nisuin is giving us that framework or understanding or deeper understanding about this act, which seems to be just a simple natural human act that is not governed or guided by the Torah. Over here, the Birkat Nisuin help us frame it for us and help us to understand what is unique about Kedushat Yisrael and what is unique about the fact that this Nisuin is different than simply a base act that is common to any living being. And again, as I mentioned before, there might actually be the difference between the Birkat Nisuin at the Chuppah and the Birkat Nisuin that is associated with the Sheva Brachot later on by the days after the Chuppah. And for that reason, you could question whether if you have the Chuppah before nightfall and the Suda after nightfall, does it count towards the 7 days of Sheva Brachot if they really are maybe different in nature, the Birkat Nisuin of the Chuppah versus the Birkat Nisuin of the Sheva Brachot for the 7 days afterwards? What is the connection between them? Do they overlap or they are separate entities? Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Zayin Amud Bet.